This is Hearts of Oak podcast. Free speech, religious disagreement, children's rights, and open and free discussion on any topic are bedrock to a democratic free society, and we seek to promote and champion these basic rights. Join us. Let's keep the conversation going.
So thank you for joining us. If you're watching live, thank you so much for watching any of the platforms, and thank you for those of you who watch more and more on the website. So heartsofoak.org/livestream or /video. Click on the live stream or video tab on the top and you can watch live on that. Rumble are very good on not censoring, so we won't have any issues on that, and it means that we can live stream something that maybe we don't put on YouTube. So do go and enjoy that. And if you're listening on Podbean or any of our other podcasting platforms, thank you so much. It's great to have you with us and great to see that building and great to see all over. So we last week at our back office chat, we were looking at where our listeners were, and every single US state has weekly downloads. So it was interesting. Even Alaska, all the way up there, they enjoy listening. Let me, so Keith Morfitt, hi guys from Guernsey on DLive, great to have you, Keith. Jesse's Odyssey, good. RCW, have a great base mate in, had a great base mate in Belfast. Wonderful. Well, you're on YouTube, so thank you. And what, Loza B, evening everyone on YouTube. Lee Sainsbury's, Peter, what are the books behind you? Well, the books are The Bad Boys of Brexit, and the other one is Defeating Jihad by Sebastian Gorka. And another one is our guest on Monday, and it is Dominic Frisby. Bitcoin, the future of money. I've just finished it. Fascinating subject, something I've been interested in the last 9 months. Just finished that book, and he's joining us on Monday to discuss that on a live. So tune in for that. I'm sure there are other books. We're not going to go through all my books. That would take a while. So we're going to jump in. Speaker's Corner, Steve, thank you. You were with us back when we were discussing what happened to Hatun at Speaker's Corner. I think I was about 3,000 feet up in the Balkan Mountains. So it's nice to be back home in the UK and great to have you with us. So thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thanks very much for inviting me back. And as Wickfield used to tell us, it's Saturday night. And I'm glad to see that we've both got our Saturday night party shirts on.
I was wondering if you're going to break out in song there, but I was...
No, I won't expose everyone to that.
I have no idea what your singing voice is, but hey, we can maybe do that for another event.
Not bad at all, I might say.
You can find Steve... If after this you think, I want more wisdom from that guy, you can go on to at Steve Right and Left on Twitter. Steve posts very regularly, so you can go there. And he's also at Speaker's Corner more or less every Sunday and has been doing that for, what, nearly 20 years?
A long time.
Long time. Probably 20 years. So thank you so much for joining us. And a whole range of stories. And the interesting thing was when Steve sent over a list that he was looking at, I went through them and I thought, actually, I probably would have picked most of those as well. So we were right on the same wavelength. And the first one we're going to look at is, if I can bring it up, is on our eco warriors, and it's interesting to see the difference that these individuals are treated than some of us who protest against lockdown restrictions. So here we have the story is from LBC everywhere. Anger after police filmed asking M25 eco protesters if they need anything. You couldn't make this up. Police have been filmed asking protesters if they are in discomfort. This is sitting on the middle of the M25 blocking the main road in the UK. And if they need anything, as their handling of the M25's blockades drew criticism. It is unbelievable. So, Steve, you've been at some of the demos, some of the anti-lockdown demos, and here the police are wanting to look after those who are causing complete economic chaos.
Yeah, absolutely. So apparently this is actually an offshoot of Extinction Rebellion called Insulate Britain. So, you know, they're campaigning specifically for the, you know, the world-ending risk of our homes in Britain not being insulated. So basically, your typical middle-class numpties from Guildford causing the rest of us our lives complete and utter nightmare. So I think 3 days during the last week, they've been blocking different sections of the M25, slip roads onto the M25. And the police have just basically stood back and watched them, causing, you know, hours and hours of queues, backing up in the middle of rush hour. You know, a few years ago, I used to have the pleasure of commuting every day on the M25, and it's not a pleasant experience at the best of times. But, you know, to create those hours, I think one of them apparently that created 6 hours of backup on the M25. One of them apparently at the end of the backup, there was a multiple car crash and the air ambulance had to come and take the woman off who was seriously injured and I think in intensive care for some time. And it was just the police's complete lack of any action, basically just standing back. And I'd say it was also odd that LBC seemed to be every single one of them. So, yeah. You know, I guess that wasn't a random chance thing. And there was one particular clip, which I think was from a Hertfordshire section of the M25 that you know, went viral, where the senior female officer was basically chatting to these numpties who were just, you know, only, I don't know, half a dozen, 10 or so of these numpties just sitting across the road saying, you know, are you okay? If there's anything we can do to help you. You know, I think they put an order in for Pret sandwiches later as well. And it was just like, for goodness sake, do the police not see the crass, gross inconsistency of this? You know, the police must already be at an all-time low in terms of the general population's trust in them at the moment after the nonsense of lockdown and what's been going on during lockdown. The fact that then they stand there and do that and behave like that way, you know, clearly, well, you can only assume it's because they support the cause that's why they just stand back and don't do anything about it at all. But again, as I've said before, if the police tactics come down to whether they support the specific cause of the protest or not, surely that's a road to, you know, absolute and utter chaos. Because, you know, we're told afterwards that apparently Priti Patel, read the Riot Act to, all the police commissioners for these different forces, because it was a load of different police forces from, obviously, you know, Thames Valley to Essex, a number of them. But, you know, it was just, what the hell are you doing, police?
So you were saying that there may be 3 police forces involved and still they couldn't shift these people.
Exactly. And again, on some of the LBC videos, you know, quite understandably, some of the drivers were getting quite irate. Yeah, yeah. And I know there was another video clip where one guy very easily just picked up and shunted one of the protesters out of the way. And you think, well, if one member of the public can do that, you know, you've got 20 officers there at least. Surely it would take you minutes to clear that road quite easily. But no, you choose to stand and watch them and allow them sitting there for hours, causing complete mayhem to people. Again, they were all in the morning rush hour whilst people are trying to get to work, earn a living. And again, you know, some of those people, you know, not everyone's on a guaranteed salary. Some people, you know, if you don't work your day, you don't get paid a day's salary. So, you know, how dare they do that? And they did it multiple days, day after day, except for one day when it rained and there was no protest that day. So, you know, they can't even put up with a bit of rain. They are such pathetic softies.
Well, that's when we needed to keep our water cannons. It would have been perfect opportunity, but sadly we don't have those. Let's move on to our next. Stephen Moore says, Steve is a great patriot. There you go. We've got a fan club tonight for you. Here we have a new defence agreement, which has come together. And this is between America, the UK and Australia. And they've called it AUKUS. And it's been interesting how it's annoyed lots of people. So obviously we've had the French here annoyed. France recalls envoys amid security pact row. France has said it is recalling its ambassadors in the US and Australia for consultations in protest of a security deal which involves which includes the UK. The French foreign minister said the exceptional decision was justified by the situation's exceptional gravity. The alliance known as AUKUS will see Australia being given the technology to build nuclear-powered submarines. And, of course, we've also seen that the New Zealand PM has also got annoyed. And she said, well, you're not allowed to have your boats in our waters then. So I don't think that's much of a disadvantage. But, New Zealand are now saying that. So, yeah, what do you make of this new defence alliance, Steve?
So I think this was probably the biggest major news story of the week. And in my view, it's a really positive story. I think it's a really key, strong military and intelligence cooperation, collaboration between us, Australia, and the US. And I think that's only going to be a good thing for the UK. And I think, you know, it's quite telling that this has happened at this point in time. We all know, the elephant in the room globally at the moment is China.
Yeah.
And I guess, Australia being the geographically closest nation to that country is, probably in a greater position of risk than we are. So, I think it's great for them, and I think it's great for us that we've come together. And I think also it's really telling that, this, in a way, in some ways, replaces the old Five Eyes, which, yep. if people don't know, was basically Australia, US and the UK, but also New Zealand and Canada. So I think it's quite telling that both Canada and New Zealand are now not part of this specific collaboration. And, we could all kind of surmise and guess why that might be, but we know the direction Trudeau is taking Canada in. We know the direction that Ardern is taking New Zealand in. You might quite imagine that our powers that be are thinking, are they countries that we now want to share, the most sort of in-depth, important level of intelligence with? So I think that, that was quite telling. And we've not heard anything from Canada or that I'm aware of sort of following this this bit of news. And obviously France are throwing out their toys, predominantly, I understand, because they've just lost a $40 billion submarine deal because they were lined up to do it. That's quite telling why we would not want to use France for that now, but kind of do it in-house. So, I wonder what's to come on this agenda, to be frank, in terms of, the reasons that they wanted to do it now and, what we may learn, the things that this collaboration achieve in terms of stopping bad stuff happening. And let's face it, China has become, the CCP is becoming a growing and worrying force globally. And to be honest, a lot of the time, we and other nations are at fault, in my view, for putting ourselves in a position of risk and exposure where, they can pull the strings. And let's face it, I wouldn't trust China at all, any more than I would trust Russia on anything of global importance at the moment. So I think it was great news, but I think we wait to see what comes next in terms of the collaboration and the outcomes and what it might prevent.
Of course, we've got Canadian elections coming up on the 20th on Monday. And it was interesting that Biden called Scott Morrison that guy down under. If he can't remember the person's name, do you trust him with a nuclear deal? I don't know. So,
but our friend Jacinda in New Zealand, how childish, sort of saying, you're not coming in our waters. Yeah. So, there's going to be a globally supported, very powerful protection. And you're saying, no, we don't want it. We don't want it in our waters. We don't want that protection. It's just pathetic and it's childish and it's the sort of nonsense that we expect from some of these world leaders these days.
Well, I guess Australia could just nuke New Zealand and then remove it and then it would be all Australia water. So that's one option. But we wouldn't, of course, suggest or recommend that. Let's go to a story that I was at. I went and I covered this, and I talked to one of the main ladies who was involved in the legal side, and listened to Kira Bell as well. This is a story, and it links to probably some of the vaccination story as well about children. Children under 16 can take life-changing puberty blockers without their parents' consent, rules Court of Appeal as it overturns landmark verdict against Tavistock Gender Clinic. The Tavistock and Portman NHS Foundation Trust won a bid to overturn a ruling, which is the NHS's place where they try and change gender for children, if that is possible. It was ruled it was unlikely the 13-year-old could consent to puberty-blocking drugs, but the NHS Trust brought an appeal against last year's High Court ruling in June. Now, the Court of Appeal said it was inappropriate for High Court to give guidance. The crazy line in this was, they said it's up to the doctors to decide. Well, surely we have courts that make decisions, and they said we can't make a decision across all individuals, therefore it has to be up to the doctor. But the whole point of having a law is it covers everyone. It doesn't matter who they are, what colour they are, where they're from, everyone has the same law. So it is, you're probably as concerned as I am on this, Steve.
Yeah, so imagine if you're a 15-year-old now and anywhere in the country. So you can't smoke, you can't legally drink alcohol, you can't have sex, you can't get married, you can't vote in the general election or in any election, which, by the way, I think all of those principles are absolutely fine and right, that 15-year-olds can't do any of those things. But now, without your parents' consent, you can consent to having life-changing puberty blockers. And just to also chip in whilst we're on this sort of general subject, of course, the other thing that now looks apparent is that you can also consent to having the COVID vaccine without your parents' consent. So, you know, two worrying things that are now suddenly materialising, where, you know, if you're 15 years old, the British state is absolutely fine with you having that consent. And as I say, you know, these puberty blockers, they're life-changing things. Yeah. So, as much as I think the trans lobby is going absolutely crazy, and certainly political parties on the left are going trans obsessive, you know, I don't have a problem with people undergoing gender reassignment. You know, if you're a grown adult, you can decide to chop off or stick on or put whatever you choose in your body.
Pin the tail on the donkey.
Or chop the tail off the donkey, whichever direction you're going. You know, I really don't have a problem with it. And, you know, I think they should be supported, and we shouldn't be discriminating against them or vilifying them or anything. You know, they're human beings that should be treated with dignity. Yep. But I'm sorry, for children without their parents' consent, life-changing. You know, this isn't, or you know, you're injected with something, and then if you change your mind 2 years later, you can undo it. Puberty is a once in a lifetime moment in terms of the development of your body, physically, mentally, on every front. If you miss that, or if you alter that by drugs, by chemicals, you can't undo that. And the thought of a 13, 14, 15-year-old doing that without even the sense of their parents intervening. Well, you know, anything, you know, and joining it with the COVID vaccine, anything to think that a 14, 12, 14, 13-year-old can do without their parent even knowing, let alone consenting, just seems completely and wholly wrong. You know, going in a very scary, worrying, bad, wrong direction.
It's one of those stories you read and you think, how can anyone make this decision? And Kira Bell said, I've read some of her testimony, heard her statement outside the court, and she had argued children, there's no way they can make such a monumentous life-changing decision. They has to be given to parents. And now that a clinic that they actually make their money from you doing this, they're the ones that will decide. And of course, why would they turn someone away if that's their business? So it doesn't make any sense.
No, not at all. And there's even been whistleblowers from within that organisation, haven't there? And unfortunately, as on so many fronts, things become so politicised.
Yeah.
This is a complete random tangent here, but I was in Foyle's bookshop with my son earlier. He was 13, and we were looking at the sort of young adults and the teenager book section. Book after book, shelf after shelf, all politically driven. You know, massive LGBTQ plus section, a big ethnicity section. But just reading through all the other sections, you know, it almost seemed like every fourth book on the shelf had a politically driven message, and obviously a social justice message. And I think, you know, and on this specific issue, we are letting political dogma get in the way of common sense, to be frank.
Yeah,
this politically obsessed dogma that anyone 20 years ago, and maybe, who knows, I'd like to think in 20 years in the future, will look back and say, you know, how did we allow that to go so far wrong, where political ideologues started influencing public policy to the extent that our children's health and futures were affected.
Yeah,
you know, we're going in a crazy, crazy place. And you know, looking at those books in Foyle's bookshop, you just think, gosh, what hope have we got when this nonsense is being drilled into our children, just in terms, even in terms of their fiction, the books that you know, they like to sit and read. It's a scary, scary place.
Well, we're going to go into the Tories, which may be as scary, because this is all, again, all this is happening under Conservative government. So it was weird when I had Carl Benjamin on a couple of days ago. He ended up trying to defend the Conservatives because I was. So, yeah, it was a strange discussion we had. But this here is from the Express, and general election alert. Tory party put on notice as Boris eyes another 5 years in power. Conservative party staff are thought to be placed on alert for a general election after being told to start preparing immediately for voters to go to the ballot box. I don't know what to make of this because we still have our restrictions, and the Tories have now fallen even behind Labour in some polls. Yeah, so we might get Keir Starmer. I mean, I don't know.
I will turn to religion if that happens. And I think that there are two things kind of behind this story. The first is that the government is currently proceeding down the line of scrapping the fixed-term Parliaments Act, which means that, you know, they don't have to wait the full five-year term. They can they can have call an election earlier. And I mean, on that, I was quite comfortable with the Fixed Term Parliament Act. It didn't necessarily seem right that it was in the hands of the sitting government to call the precise date, which would be, you know, on the whims of the polls and how think they should do. So I was quite comfortable with Fixed Term Parliament. So I think that's one thing that they're currently scrapping. And then the second one, it's you know, out of the reshuffle that we had. So Oliver Dowden, who's the new party chairman, who kind of made this statement to the Tory faithful, basically saying, you know, prepare for election, get out on the on the battlefield and prepare, which is a pretty clear missive, isn't it, to the Tory folk. So I think we all need to prepare ourselves. I know, for example, the Reform Party are currently setting and getting in place 600 candidates to fight constituencies across the country. And I think that's the right thing to do because it could happen. I mean, I read that there were rumours that they were preparing for 2023, which is obviously 2 years or so away, but I mean, I don't know the timetable of the scrapping of the Fixed Term Parliaments Act, but I guess it could be sooner. And we also heard rumours, didn't we, that Boris said he wants to go on for another decade, I think I read. And he wants to beat Thatcher's record on that. I mean, I was starting to think during the sort of, well, a few months ago, how long ago was it? Well, sort of 4 or 5 months ago when things weren't looking so good. I thought, you know, he'll cut his losses and run. But I think you know, let's face it, he's not a principled man. He's a man that's obsessed with the power, and he'll go on if he thinks he's got any chance of winning it. So now, obviously, we have had, as you just said, a bit of a dip in some of the polls where Labour seem to be just going ahead. To be honest, that's hard to imagine with the complete and utter mess of the Labour Party and deserting their sort of core roots of people and of sort of principles and policies, etc. It's hard to imagine how they could really steal the election. So,
but actually, when you look at, as I was talking to Carl on Monday, and Thursday, and said, what is the point of the Tories? Because they're now the party of highest taxation in 70 years. They've stripped all civil liberties away. Is there any point in them? They've destroyed small businesses through the lockdown. So actually, it's a strange situation where you have a Conservative Party that hasn't conserved anything. Then you look at the landscape and there are smaller parties and their difficulty of actually achieving something under the first past the post.
You know, for likes of, you know, you and me, Peter, that are kind of, you know, quite interested in politics, I'm sure whenever it happens, whether it's, you know, this year, next year, or at the end of the 5 years, it's going to be fascinating times. Because as you say, we've got a Labour Party that's deserted its roots. We've got a Conservative Party that's deserted its roots. And I think I did hear that apparently the Lib Dems are sort of moving forward with more sort of anti-lockdown, anti-COVID passport stance. And I did always wonder why they hadn't done that sooner, really, because, you know, those things aren't very liberal, are they? Or democratic, come to think of it. So I did wonder that, you know, they could steal some thunder on that front. But, you know, they're starting from a low point, and I'm not sure whether people have forgiven them for the Tory alliance either. So, and then we, you know, as we all know, we've got all these other parties. But, you know, Reform got 5% in one poll. In my view, that was really, really positive. But, you know, the likes of For Britain, Heritage, Reclaim, SDP even, none of them are going anywhere fast. We watch this space, but it's going to be interesting times.
Anthea, Two London Girls, says that she's joining Reform Party. They have great candidates. And Elaine Jennings was saying For Britain is a good party to look into. Yeah, they're all other. We've had Anne-Marie on before, so it's well worth looking, because I look at the Conservatives and struggle to think, actually, as a social conservative, they haven't conserved anything in society. So it's a
in all those minor point parties, there are points to find that are positive, are good about them. But from my perspective, there are definite negatives in all of them, except for the Reform Party. And this is a party political plug. Go and read the Reform Party's website now and just read their policy statements, because I revisited it the week that we're just ending, and I read through it line by line. And I don't think there was a word that I disagreed with. And as I was, you know, when you're sort of reading something, you think, my goodness, this is all just common sense. It's absolutely spot on every single front: reforming the public sector, reforming the tax system, reforming the electoral system. Everything they say, I could not find fault with any of it, frankly. But of course, you know, it's not just about having the right policies. It's about having the right candidates, getting any traction with the media, getting any coverage in the media. You know, there are a lot of hurdles that you need to get over. But go and read the Reform Party website. I couldn't find anything to fault on it.
Well, let's move off politics and onto the Taliban. Not that we're linking those to any of the political parties here. Here we have, from The Guardian, Taliban ban girls from secondary education in Afghanistan. The government announces reopening of high schools for boys, but makes no mention of girls. Girls were not mentioned in Friday's statement, which means boys will be back at their desks next week after a one-month hiatus, while their sisters will still be stuck at home. I've seen lots of images of girls in the classrooms divided up and covered in head to foot with their black garments that you wouldn't know whether they're people or not underneath it. But then I guess this is what you get whenever walk away after 20 years and let a country descend into whatever it's descended into. But yeah, what else did they expect, I guess?
Well, exactly. And don't you think, I just think the world has been hoodwinked by the Taliban, who've been on a bit of a sort of PR drive since Biden ran away.
Yeah.
And I think some people have fallen for it, thinking that they're this, you know, we had new Labour, now we've got new Taliban. But I think we're going to find out increasingly that they're no different to the old Taliban. I think it was also teachers as well. I think I read that women teachers weren't being allowed back. So at the end of the day, and the ladies in the chat are going to like this, you know, a successful economy, a successful society is much as built on allowing women to be successful and making sure they're educated and they have opportunities and that they have a voice. And they're not going to have any of those things in Afghanistan. And, you know, I've met some Afghan people who are very bright, intelligent, hardworking folk, but they're here in Britain for obvious reasons. Yes. So, I think it's sad. And how any government around the rest of the world can accept the Taliban as the official government of Afghanistan, in terms of how they gained that so-called power, and just knowing what they're going to do. And drip, 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 we will find out they're the vile, evil, theocratic, evil men that they were always. And they're just putting on a decent veneer, just to get that place at the international table. But I think we will regret it. And, you know, and again, going back to the first or one of the earlier stories that we're talking about, you know, look how quick China and Russia have been to get in there with Afghanistan. It's only going to be bad for us.
Yeah, we're looking more into Afghanistan on Thursday with Claire Lopez. So did a pre-record with her, ex-CIA, 20 years in the CIA. So she'll be joining. And I guess the sad thing, the women in Afghanistan, they can't self-identify as men. I don't think that's allowed under the Taliban. So
no, although it's much easier in the other direction, isn't it, obviously?
It is. so continuing on to the terror line, here we have in the Daily Mail, are everyone's favourite terrorist,
Shamimi Baby.
So this is I hadn't seen this, Steve, before you sent it. It's a great headline. She should be treated like a terrorist, not a lost gap year student, ex-Met counter-terror chief says. As he says, she's a threat and should never be allowed to return to the UK. She was saying she could come back and advise the government. And we're considering this.
Who's advising this woman? So, yeah, so we had a further publicity stunt on GMB earlier this week where that they interviewed her sitting in her Syrian refugee camp, allegedly, sitting in her baseball cap, in her vest top with her beautiful makeup on.
Yeah.
Telling us how very, very sorry she was and how she really shouldn't be punished and that we should bring her back. And as you say, yeah, even had the gall to suggest that she could help us with the fight in terror. And yeah, I thought that quote was absolutely brilliant. Yeah, she's not a gap year student from Godalming now coming back to go off to Guildford University. She is a terrorist, absolute terrorist. And as well, I think it was... I think it was an MI5 guy who also said that, you know, we the public do not know the full story, the evidence that they have on that individual and what she's done since she's been in Syria. So she's now 22 years old. She doesn't have British citizenship. We do not want her back. Why would you bring anyone where there is a risk of them being a severe terrorist threat to this country? Why would we bring her back? She was a member of ISIS, and I'm sure it's her activities in ISIS that is the, you know, the real intelligence that we're not necessarily know all about, why they know that she's not going to come back. But of course, all the lefty lawyers will be squealing about it and saying how outrageous this is and Britain are better than this. But no, we don't want to bring back known terrorist threats into the country.
No, and the weird thing is on the last story about the puberty blockers, they're saying and the vaccines, they're saying 12-year-olds can make those decisions. But with her, they will argue she didn't know what she was doing. She was a child. Why? You can't have it both ways.
The hypocrisy of the left. Absolute blatant hypocrisy, isn't it? Yeah, no. Very good point. Very good point.
Okay. Oh no, sorry. I hadn't changed it. Let me change the story. Always good if I change the story. We're moving on to universities. Maybe Shamima Begum will become, I don't know, head girl or something at one of these universities. Here we have a change in the order of the oldest and the greatest. And from the mayor, we have the Times University Guide, 10 best and worst in the country, was surprise new one. So the University of Andrews has been ranked the best university in the UK, bumping both University of Oxford and Cambridge out of the top spot for the first time in the league's table's history, with high scores in teaching quality, student experience, and its faring through the pandemic. I didn't think any students went to university during the pandemic, but anyway, it has topped the Times Good University Guide for the first time in the table's 30 years, rising up the ranks from third place. And I think we don't have. So, yeah, it's University of St Andrews up in Scotland is now the number one university in Britain. Who would have thought?
Yeah, so up Scotland. So, yeah, so the Times publishes this list every single year. And it's a pretty sort of thorough listing of universities. Mm-hmm. You know, they look at a lot of different factors, from student satisfaction to teaching quality to research quality, completion rates, graduate prospects, etc., when they finish. So it's really, really thorough. So you can, you know the outcome of this is accurate. So St Andrews, which is where Kate and William went, wasn't it? Where they met. Now steamed forward to the head of Oxford and Cambridge for the first time ever. And it was also good to say my university in the top 10. So Bath was at number 9. Great university, obviously. Great outputs, obviously. But I also wanted to mention, if you look at the other end of this list, so you've got some amazing places like the University of Bedfordshire, University of Ravenbourne. I'd never even heard of that. Apparently it's in London somewhere. Never heard of Ravenbourne. University of East London, University of Westminster, infamous University of Wolverhampton. All new universities that were created, when was it, back in the 90s, in the 2000s, basically when Tony Blair was in power. And Tony Blair had this obsession with getting 50% of young people into university. In my view, ridiculous target. University isn't the right way forward for most for a lot of people. They created all of these universities, and now lo and behold, they're all rank bottom. I say all, many of them are rank bottom. Certainly all the bottom ones in this list are absolutely at the bottom. And as I said, this list isn't just about the academic outputs, it's about satisfaction, it's about research, it's about a whole bundle of things. So I think that's another nail in the coffin, really, of these new universities, which shouldn't be focused on what they're doing now. There is a whole need, a different need for vocational education, for apprenticeships, etc., etc. Yeah. I think, again, that this is an area that needs huge reform. We need to get rid of these universities, stop pretending that they're universities, and get them focused on quality vocational training for young people. Because they're a joke at the moment. They're an absolute joke.
Not completely. Well, let's move on to COVID. Actually, before, just if you're, we find probably half and half of our viewers half subscribe to whichever platform you're watching on. So if you're on YouTube, half are non-subscribers, half subscribers. So however you're watching, do click that subscribe button and do like and share. I want others to hear Steve's wisdom, so do send it on and do like it. It messes up with YouTube's restrictions whenever you have more comments, more likes. So please do help us on that and put your comments in it. So on to COVID. We haven't actually done COVID yet. Wow. We have the kind of good news. Here we have the Sun. Vac your bags. Travel update UK. Double jabbed can jet abroad as half term as amber list is scrapped and lateral flow tests replace PCR. So yeah, Brits can now jet off for a hassle-free autumn in the Sun after the amber lists were scrapped and expensive PCR were scrapped. Obviously, lateral flow tests, you don't get them for free. You pay for those. So you probably end up paying the same for one that you do a video with someone. So they're still expensive. But to me, actually, it shocked me reading the Mail today. A big story. It didn't mention vaccinated, unvaccinated. It was a big story in the front. We're now free. We can go anywhere. And a big double page spread inside. But it was all to do with those who've chosen to be vaccinated. Those who have not chosen to be vaccinated, screw you. You're not going anywhere. So, yeah, it was, again, this is setting up a them and us. It's setting up a huge split in society. And that if you're unvaccinated and go, well, you know, you do 10 days quarantine when you come back. So it's just to give the negative spin, it's not as positive as it first seems if you've chosen, as I have, not to get a vaccine.
And I can tell you, I live under the flight path of Heathrow. It's silent now. I mean, there's some pluses to it, obviously, for me, because it's much quieter. But, you know, it is
I plane spot with my plane app. I can watch them coming in four in a row sometimes. I love it.
but you know, the volume of them, the total number of flights in and out of Heathrow is a minuscule proportion of what it used to be. And it's yet another industry that's been absolutely screwed by this government. Let's get that clear. It's not been screwed by COVID. It's been screwed by this government.
Exactly.
It's been a joke. I mean, I think as some people watching might have heard me say before, I am jabbed. I only did it because I wanted to go on holiday. And in the end, it did allow me to go on holiday. I mean, I was very hesitant right up to walking into the vaccination centre, but I did do it. And I was actually sick as a dog after I'd taken both the first and the second jab. I was very ill.
And you better get your third one.
I'm not. I will not be taking the top up or whatever. I absolutely not. You know, I've done it once and I'm not going to be doing it again. Not least because I was so seriously ill. I mean, after the first one, I was iller than I've ever been and as ill as I can ever remember being. You know, I was out of action for a week. I couldn't move out of bed for 2-3 days. I was seriously ill. And really, was it worth just to go on a foreign holiday? I mean, I think, you know, I'm sure that's a lot of people's reasons for doing it. But, you know, I went to Malta for a week. I had to buy 4 separate tests, one before I came back and then two when I got back. Although they changed it just before I went, so I only had to do one when I got back, but I'd already bought it. It's still sitting in my bedroom in its bulk. So if anyone wants to offer me a good price for one,
Steve can autograph it.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just an industry that's screwed. And it's also another factor that's added to people's mental health because people haven't been, you know, able to go away for a nice warm break for a week for a few £100 to get away from everything. So, and as you say, you get a headline that kind of makes out that it's all come back and it's all brilliant, but actually look at the detail and it's not. And, you know, currently it's, like Malta, where I went to Malta, you could only go to Malta if you had the 2 jabs. But, you know, are they in other countries going to be changing it to, and you've got to have the booster. Yeah. And then, you know, it's going to be a 6-monthly program, I'm guessing. And, you know, how long is that going to go on for? The industry is screwed. And as on so many fronts, we just need to shake our heads and get back to normality on it.
Of course, as I did a video on it, the top 5 vaccine companies are expecting sales by the end of 2022 of $500 billion. Yes, make of that what you will.
And we've got that because they're even saying because a lot of the countries are changing the colour of the list before the October half-term week. Yep. So again, alluding that, you know, kids are going to be able to go off with their families during half term week. Well, really? And I don't, they haven't sorted out the queuing last time I heard at Heathrow as well, managing people coming through the gates. Although when I came back, it was okay. But I think since then, it's got a lot worse.
Because all the border officials had been pinged. You couldn't make it up. You really couldn't.
Well, I could speak for a whole hour on ineffectiveness of the public sector and how they've lapped up this lockdown because they basically can sit at home with their feet up doing even less than they normally do. It's to me, it's emphasised even more the ineffectiveness and that they're not fit for purpose, so many of our public sector departments and areas.
Yeah. We've got three or four. Let's fire through them. But Fiona Harrison says, what is the plane app you talked about? It is Flight Radar 24. There you go. I just had to. Wonderful. I could look at it for hours. Flight Radar 24. Those of us who enjoy planes too much. Let's see if we can do just 2 minutes on each of these. Here we have, it was George Eustace. The Sun's headlines, VAC of concern. What? Britain will be plunged back into another full lockdown if vaccine-busting COVID arrives, Cabinet Minister warns. And there he is, George Eustace on Sky News, saying that draconian restrictions will have to be reimposed to combat a dangerous new strain that gets around the jab. I'm assuming this means they're going to bring a lockdown very soon. They're warming us up, and so I guess it must be around the corner.
And actually, can I just chip in? The big story that we haven't either of us identified up to this point, Peter, is that apparently Strictly Come Dancing is being completely screwed by
I wanted to open on that with the devastating news. I forgot.
So apparently, I mean, you know, this is really serious stuff. Apparently, two of the professional dancers have refused to take the vax. Outrageous, isn't it? And apparently some of the other dancers are refusing to dance with them. But hang on a minute, and I really hope I'm not about to get any of your YouTube channels banned or anything.
No, you won't. about the vaccine.
But I thought it's all been very, very clear that the vaccination does not stop you transferring it. The vaccine does not stop you catching it. So what it does, it stops you, if you do catch it, from being seriously ill, which is okay, which is straightforward. But in that instance, why would a Strictly dancer be worried about dancing with someone who hadn't taken the vaccination? Or why would anyone be worried about doing anything with someone who hasn't taken the vax? If its purpose is if you catch it, you won't be so ill. It doesn't stop you transferring it. So therefore, what's your problem with dancing with someone who hasn't been vaccinated? And I also think apparently some people in the production crew have been tested positive with it because they were probably testing them twice a day, I would imagine. So lo and behold, some of them are going to come up positive. So, you know, this is going to bring the nation to a halt, isn't it? This is going to bring people out on the streets if Strictly is halted by this farce.
Well, I was as devastated as you are. Of course, you couldn't have a celebrity going within a mile of anyone who's unvaccinated. So that would ruin their credibility. This is one actually I'd found out. I don't know if we discussed it beforehand, Steve. This NHS admits Vax Pass app is sharing user facial recognition data with police. If Britain's socialized healthcare system, this is Breitbart, so has admitted that it's sharing facial recognition with police from the NHS app. An estimated 60 million people have installed the NHS app, which can be used to book GP doctor visits as well as NHS COVID pass. But while it's possible to use separate means of identification to verify the app, the software uses facial recognition as the standard developed by iProv, which, according to The Guardian, is linked to Conservative donors. That's a whole other story. But it gets you to record a video and then it decides that's you. These are now seemingly all being sent to the police. So I don't know whether that means the police have a... if you're basically not on that list, then you're one of the baddies who you haven't got the NHS app. But after being told this was all protected, your data would not be passed on, now they're just sending it all to the police, which is quite concerning. And yeah, not what they told us.
Yes. I mean, I know a particular friend that's going to be smiling at this point, but, you know, I question stories like this. But then I probably question stories like this 12 months ago that have now come to pass as true.
No, you're full Alex Jones, I know.
I'm resisting this mad conspiratorial New World Order social credit system, et cetera, but I know things that I poo-pooed, as I say, 12 months, 18 months ago that have come to pass as true. But I suppose the point, yeah, as you say, the point would be that the NHS is sharing with the police who's had the vaccine, who has not. Then clearly the police and security services have these systems for facial recognition. You know, they absolutely exist. I used to know someone who worked at the London Eye, and obviously that area of the South Bank is a major area of terrorist risk. And absolutely no, beyond any doubt, that there is facial recognition, as you'd hope, I guess, software in use around that area that would pick up known terrorist threat faces there. So, you know, I know some people probably would even have an issue with human rights and privacy and everything on that. I don't have any issue with that. But obviously, yeah, the concept of the police having data and knowing, you know, what face had been vaccinated and what face had not been vaccinated, if that was true and if that was something that was going to happen in the future, that would be something that would be incredibly scary for the, you know, the basic freedoms that we thought we enjoyed and that we had in this country. But I would still like to think that it's conspiratorial nonsense, but I will be wrong in 12 months' time, I'm sure.
True. What's the difference between a conspiracy theory and truth? Well, about 6 to 9 months. So, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
But I think they have. I think in South Korea and Japan, they have cameras that detect changes in temperature or any symptoms which they pick up. So they target, and then I guess maybe you're shot or something if you have COVID. But so I think that technology is existing, and I can imagine this being used in a similar way to track people who haven't had the app. Or
it's hard to imagine, because obviously these things usually happen steadily, don't they, through creep. It's not all of a sudden. But it's hard to imagine how that sort of scenario could happen, you know, slowly over time. Because, you know, the police have your data of whether you've had the vaccination, and they use facial recognition technology to find you.
How
could that be used in anything other than a very scary 1984 type scenario? But I guess, you know, currently we're looking at Australia, aren't we, to see where these things, how far these things can go. And just look what's happening in Australia at the moment, in Victoria in particular. Absolutely scary stuff, you know, the videos that are coming out of there. You just would have never ever predicted that sort of behavior by the state anywhere.
No, and why do the police need such data? Absolutely. There are two, we'll just a minute on these. I'll just stick them together, which again shows that what we were told was not true is true. Here we have Dr. Anthony Fauci, the fount of all wisdom, says 3 shots will be needed for a full COVID-19 vaccination. So it looks as though, even though the FDA have not approved the booster from Pfizer, so that's one. And the other one was along similar lines of being told one thing, and really the motto is, what would Trump do? And what would Trump do is, well, the medical treatment that Trump got, life-saving COVID treatment, this is today, given to Donald Trump, is now available, or will be available on the NHS from next week. And you scroll down, so over 50s and immune suppressed patients to benefit from Ranoprieve, an antibody treatment used last year to treat the former US president. At the moment, there isn't any treatment. You're just told to go home and rest or stay home and rest. But now this is the first treatment and they should have listened to the Donald.
That's a great final line, really, isn't it?
It is really crazy.
Who again would have thought? Okay, we all know Trump had his a lot of people that thought he was completely mad and bad and wrong. But you wonder what those people are saying now when they look at Biden. You know, who would have thought that the leader of the free world would be the bumbling clown that we currently have in the White House?
And sadly, we have no Biden clips today.
Sorry,
viewers. We usually have one.
He couldn't even remember the Australian Prime Minister's name, could he?
I remember there was one. He said something, and there was I think it was Sky News Australia, or it might have been Fox News, and the reporter said, "I will send you a check for $100 if you can tell me what on earth Biden is saying." He was just talking just for like 40 seconds about nothing. None of it makes sense. It was English, but it doesn't make any sense.
And he had another whispering moment as well. He started whispering to the microphone.
Yeah. Very freaky. So let's, I just want to finish off with one or two clips. I'll finish off. It is Singapore, I believe. It's a robot that tracks social distancing. This could be coming to us. Here's a little clip of this. And it goes on all around. So it's strange how technology is being used to restrict and to check up on us. Let me see if I can show. I wanted to show, and my computer is not not playing ball. Let me give me a moment and see if I can bring some of them up. There were some funny memes. Let me try one more time. Here's one. So if you ever see this when you're out, this is where it's come to. There you go. Not just the person, but the dog. So if you see that, run away. And there's another one.
You do still see double maskers or even triple maskers out.
Yeah. You?
It's just unbelievable.
Better to be safe, of
Better
course.
Sorry.
And this is interesting from the southern border in Texas. And that's the border. And I think, I've forgotten his name, Texas Senator. He was there doing a press conference talking about 10,500 Mexicans all crushed in under the bridge there. And then, of course, the difference, children going back to school must be restricted, must be kept apart. But none of that for everyone coming in from Mexico. And I'll give you one more. One more. Oh, this is quite funny. They're all quite funny. And just to finish on, and there we go. There you go. People who trust the government and what they're doing over you. So, on that clean bit of humor, we will finish off. Steve, thank you so much for joining us. Once again, it was Ted Cruz. Sorry, someone stuck up. It was Ted Cruz. A brain freeze there on the southern border, highlighting the Mexican wave of immigration. at Steve Right and Left. You can go and follow him on Twitter if you don't already, and you can get much more Steve wisdom if you look up there.
And also occasionally a few bits and bobs on YouTube at Atheist Steve.
Atheist Steve on YouTube, no problem. You can find him there. So thank you. It's great to catch up, Steve.
Yeah.
It really is. We should do this in person now. We're allowed to.
Yes, we should. Yes, do you ever do live ones together?
We've looked at, we've done interviews, in-person interviews a couple of times, but I've looked at, I want to do these with maybe a group of people discussing these type of stories, like a pub. It'd be great.
So, yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, you're only a few miles down the road from me anyway, aren't you? So
exactly. Well, we will leave our viewers. Steve and I can chat after we leave you all to go. Thank you so much for joining us. As I said, on Monday, it is Dominic Frisby looking at Bitcoin is the future of money. And is interesting, when he wrote the book in 2014, the size of the cryptocurrency market was, I think, $3 billion. It is now $2.3 trillion. So it has grown exponentially and is having more and more effect, with now five countries accepting it and two adopting it as a currency and three others moving towards that. So tune in on Monday. Dominic Frisby is a comedian. He wrote 17 million F-offs, which is how I came across him in the Brexit campaign. But he's also a financial journalist and writes all about finances. So looking forward to that. Fascinating. That'll be live, so we can pull your comments in. And if you don't get our weekly emails because you haven't subscribed, so go to heartsofoak.org, click on that connect tab, stick in your email address and your name, and we'll give you our weekly emails. Usually come out on Monday with updates on what's happening. So I think that's about it. I wish our viewers a wonderful rest of your evening, rest of your weekend, and look forward to seeing you on Monday with Dominic Frisby. So thank you so much for joining us, and good night.
Cheers, Peter. Good night.
If you like what we do, sign up to our mailing list. Donate, share, and subscribe to our many platforms at heartsofoak.org. Thank you for listening.